Hey, 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 everybody. Today is going to be a fire episode. I get launched. My fire really comes from a spark, which is ignited by listening to the Lex Fridman and Jack Dorsey podcast episode. Lex Fridman, he has a great podcast called the AI Podcast. And I go into globalism, interconnectedness, freedom, how it's all related. So stay tuned. As usual, you can find me on my website, tstuch.com, T-S-T-U-C-H.com. You can find me on Instagram now, Taylor Radio, T-A-Y-L-O-R-R-A-D-I-O. You can find me on Twitter, tstuch1, T-S-T-U-C-H, the number one. And YouTube, Taylor space Stuch, T-A-Y-L-O-R space Stuch, S-T-U-C-H. Thank you. Enjoy the episode. All right. So Lex Fridman did a podcast with Jack Dorsey, with old Jack Dorsey. And it was actually pretty damn good, I will say. It just depends on whether or not you like hearing two guys with absolutely no change in the way that their voice sounds for an entire hour, you could probably deal with it. And I'm not joking. I mean, these two guys, I don't know if you've ever heard Elon Musk. You've heard Elon Musk talk. He's very monotone. He talks kind of like this, and he doesn't get loud. He doesn't really show emotion. And Lex Fridman is similarly, he kind of talks like this and sounds kind of like a robot. But these are really smart guys. And so, you know, who really cares exactly how their voice sounds? That's not why we're listening to them. Well, Jack Dorsey also has kind of a monotone voice like this, and you know, kind of can be hard to listen to if you're not into that kind of thing. But what I wanted to talk about was the podcast that they did. So Lex Fridman had Jack Dorsey on his pod, and they discussed they didn't talk about Twitter. He said he was going to have on Jack Dorsey later on to talk about Twitter. But what was interesting was what they did discuss. They talked about AI a little bit. They talked about Bitcoin. And first off, I want to say when it comes to Jack Dorsey, I have some mixed feelings about Jack. I actually think he's a genuine good guy. So when people talk about him being like a piece of shit and everything like that, I don't think that's true. I'm willing to separate the man from, I don't want to say separate him from his actions, because some of his actions have been great. When it comes to the Cash App, he's been giving away a lot of money. He's been, he's provided a platform through Cash App and Square company. I think the company that owns Cash App is called Square. And he has been really great in getting people on board into Bitcoin and providing an easy way for people to do it. Because before the Cash App, you didn't have to be technical in order to get into Bitcoin, but you had to be more technical. Now, in order to get into Bitcoin, you really don't have to have that much knowledge. You hardly have to have any knowledge at all to begin buying Bitcoin. If you want to get it, you can get it. It's easy. It is not difficult to do. You just download the Cash App and start buying shit. You link, you know, a card or whatever. Anyway, this isn't a advertisement for the Cash App. But this interview with him kind of was related to that. Now, I think Jack is a good guy. He's been giving away money. He's been very transparent in some ways. But what was interesting to me was how there is a overarching kind of globalist agenda to him. But I don't think there's anything sinister behind it. I don't think there's anything sinister behind his agenda. And I just think what happens is he wants to continue the trend of, like, you know, interconnectivity. And he wants to continue that trend partially because I think he believes that's a good thing. We're all humans. We're all in this together. You know, he made that comment, you know, kind of like about the world and humanity. And I want to push back against this concept that, you know, we are all in this together. We're all one thing. We're all one race. We're all one whatever. Now, I don't advocate, you know, just discriminating against anybody for no fucking reason, right? Like, you know, Americans should not be discriminating against Americans because of their skin color, their race, and religion. I'm obviously not for that shit. But what this crisis showed us, what the pandemic showed us, was that if we are too interconnected, we don't have freedom. Now, that might not be obvious to see, but I'm going to give you an example. Or I'm just going to point out exactly what happened. So a virus breaks out in China. And because a virus breaks out in Wuhan, China, a city that most people in the United States and probably the world never heard about, now America is in lockdown for months. Do you see that? Do you get that? Something happens in China, and now Americans are locked down in their homes because we are interconnected. Here's another part of this, okay? China's factories go down. Now that affects American supply chains. That affects America's ability to do business. If China steals, you know, we've been dealing with a situation with the Chinese government. Now, when I say China, I'm not talking about the Chinese people. The Chinese people are good people, for the most part, except for the hardline Communist Party members. But what I'll say this is that China, the Chinese government, has been stealing our IP. They've been stealing our information technology, or they've been stealing our intellectual property. They've been engaged in all kinds of subversive activities with Huawei, trying to get Huawei connected and set up throughout the world so that way it's easy for them to spy on other people. They've been funding their companies so that way they essentially can compete on unfair grounds, right? So China came into the World Trade Organization and said that they would abide by certain rules of trade. However, they have not abided by those rules. You know, they have the Chinese Communist Party heavily, you know, backs these state-sponsored entities, these state-funded, these state-owned entities is what they're called. And Chinese government owns 51% of those. And the Chinese government heavily funds these companies, and these companies can compete in production, manufacturing, mining of raw materials in a way that other Western countries that don't back up their companies through the state can do. Now, that doesn't mean that their model of economics is better, because their model is also being subsidized by the part of the world that doesn't do that. So, for example, China is able to do that, or the Chinese government can do that, because guess what? We are paying for all those goods. So it takes a free market, or a relatively freer market, because I don't think the United States is a totally free market, but it takes a freer market of people to buy the goods from the Chinese government in order for that system to work. Now, I want to get away from that for a minute, but basically, the Chinese government has been doing all kinds of hostile things to United States companies and all types of things of that matter, of that nature. And they've also been doing it to other countries. But when you are economically tied to China, you can't do anything about it. You can't elect your local or your state or your national leaders to take a hard line stance against somebody who you depend on for your resources. You've lost your freedom. We've lost our freedom. In the United States, we have lost our freedom effectively through economic integration with the rest of the world. Now, people don't know that. People don't understand that. People think that, you know, for the most part, we still have our freedoms. But I'm telling you, I think that we, you know, in a sense, we do not. Because we are dependent on China for pharmaceuticals. We are dependent on China for other types of raw materials. We are, you know, for a long time, it was rare earth minerals. We are dependent on China for certain types of goods that we purchase. And so how is that freedom? How is it freedom to say, oh, we can't do anything without our adversary? Because we are inextricably linked. We are inextricably tied to our adversary. This is the future that many people are pushing us towards and that have got us into this current mess. And Jack Dorsey, I like Jack Dorsey, but he is tied into this whole thing. Now, I don't think he's a conspirator in any way, but his vision, it was very interesting how the Bitcoin vision that he wants to push is a globally integrated world in terms of the internet in a global currency. Like Bitcoin could be a global currency that everyone can use on the internet in order to pursue whatever economic activity they want. Now, I'm not against that in theory, but it can't be the currency. I don't think it would be wise for every country to necessarily be, you know, I don't know. I'm going to go ahead and step back on this one because, you know, right now the U.S. dollar is that situation. But the U.S. dollar is in a tricky place. But I don't want to go into that at the moment. But essentially, that is what Jack Dorsey and many others, Silicon Valley types, big business types, many of them have been growing up in a world where we've been told and we've been preached to that we need everyone in the world to be on board on the same page. We're one big community, when really we're not. And it would be foolish for us to think so. I mean, one thing that I am not a big fan of is going to certain countries and having it be the exact same as the United States. Now, going to China is not the same as the United States, but when you go there, you realize in some of the major cities like Shanghai or areas of Beijing, it's like just a, you know, you look around, you got your McDonald's, you got your Starbucks, you got your fast food, your restaurants with, you know, just with like a Chinese twist to them in some ways. And it's like, is that what we want the world to be? You know, do you want to go to Thailand and have Thailand be the same as Tennessee? I don't want that shit. You know, I don't want to go to Taiwan and have it be the same as California. Like, it would be, I think it's an important part of our lives that we are not one global community. And if we are one global community, then we live and die by the same things. And it may not make total sense to you now, but just think of it this way. The more globalized and interconnected that we are, then the less freedom that individuals and localities and small cities and states have to decide their own path. Okay? If the Philippines is dependent on China and Japan and Taiwan and Vietnam for all of their resources, then what freedom do the Filipino people have? If the Mexican people are dependent on Americans for their money and for their goods and for their resources, then what freedom do the Mexican people have? What freedom do they really have? That's what I'm getting at. And also, the other thing I said about culture, you know, that's what I mentioned earlier was about culture, how if you go to one place, it's the same as another. You know, I think in the long term, that's a bad idea. I do not think, and you know, this is not just my opinion. These are things that I've learned from listening to very educated people. They haven't said this exact, or not maybe very, very educated, but very wise people. But you know, many of them also very educated. Nassim Taleb doesn't advocate for this, but I think it's kind of implicit in some of the philosophy that if all cultures go down the same route, if we all become one unified, bullshit, shallow Western culture, if Western culture is a mistake in the long run for humanity, then we're all going down together. So let me extrapolate on that. There are great things about the West. There are great things about Western culture. There are also very bad things about Western culture. And I'm not going to get into all those things, but one thing that is true that I see it, I see it with people my age, I see it with people younger, with people older, but family formation looks like it is becoming more and more difficult and severely delayed. Now, I'm sure that people can pull up statistics and say, oh, it's not that big a deal. But if you were to compare like family formation and single parent households from 2020 back to say like the 1960s, 1970s, 1950s, huge difference, okay? Now, I see large amounts of single women on these dating apps in their late 20s, early 30s. Okay. Do you think everybody wants this lifestyle? I do not think that everybody wants to be like looking for their husband, or somebody wants to be looking for their wife when they're 31 years old and they're trying to have a kid. Now, let me backstep on that. What I'm saying is there are lots of women out there that want to have kids that are, they're 28, 29, 30, 31, and it's just going to make the process more difficult because you got to find somebody, you got to figure out if they're right for you, and then on top of that, you got to try to have kids at a little bit more of a difficult time. It's a little bit more difficult to have kids in your 30s than it is in your 20s in terms of biology, generally speaking, though I'm sure, you know, there's many differences with that. But that's generally the case. At least that's what the science shows. So now with men, it's different. Obviously, I am not in nearly the same rush as a woman my age. Like, I'm 28 and I can wait a little, I can wait a damn while longer. Like, I mean, that's why I'm not worrying about this shit. But it's interesting that I've seen this. It's so prominent. It's so prominent. So many single people in their late 20s, early 30s, which is not, I mean, you can just, it's just not going to be that good for forming families. Now, so without going into all of that, so if that's a cultural thing in the United States, let's just say that's a cultural thing here, then why would we want to push that on other cultures? Why do we want to push people in China or India to pursue the same policies that we have that have now got us to a place where men and women are both working their asses off to what? Play video games? Like, what is everybody working to do? Everybody's working so they can go out and party with their friends till they're 40, so you can go to the club till you're 39? Like, what's the end game here? Why is it so important for us to export our culture to other parts of the world like that? You know, certain parts of the world, that would be catastrophic. And it could be catastrophic to us, right? Like if we, say, don't have high levels of immigration into the United States or even other parts of the West, you could see a situation where the native populations, the native-born populations get so low, like in Italy or in South Korea, you start to have a real problem. They're having the same problem in China, but that's for a different reason. If that leads to the collapse of a free, awesome, democratic society, and then another society that is more dogmatic with their religious beliefs comes in and says, look, we don't allow certain things, we don't allow so much freedom, we don't have democracy, but hey, we have outlived you, and now we take all this. I guess, you know, I sound a little bit passionate about this because it's a very interesting thing. I don't like this whole idea of this globalized world where everybody has to take the same fucking values as the United States or Western Europe or wherever the hell, and everybody needs to, adopt eating McDonald's and getting your kids diabetes and doing whatever. Now, that doesn't mean, it also doesn't mean that I advocate for the other types of things that we would see harmful. Let me back up. That doesn't mean I advocate for other things that are harmful to people and harmful to human rights and civil rights as we see them in the West. That doesn't mean I'm in favor of that. But we got to be careful about this whole, globalized. We need this globalized world where everybody does the same thing as what fucking Jackoff does in the United States on a Friday night. You know, maybe it's not a good idea if we don't export what goes on in, you know, the fucking urban cities in New York and Detroit. Maybe we don't want to export that to Kenya. Now, back to what I was getting at with Jack Dorsey at the very beginning, how I kind of went on this long rant. Jack Dorsey, and not just him, but it's the whole culture, it's the society. I grew up in this as well. Oh, we're all just, you know, you hear about it on Joe Rogan's experience, because Joe Rogan is like, we're all just these borders, they don't mean anything, man. Borders are just a line in the sand. Yeah, I love Joe Rogan's podcast, but, you know, that idea, these borders are just a line in the sand and they don't really matter. And And, you know, people are people. And it's like, yes, no, I get it. And it has good intentions. There are good intentions behind it. Like, I also would love it if we could just have one global community where everyone gets along. But that's not how it goes. You know, with having one global community, that means we have one global set of rules that everyone has to live by. That's one set of rules that everyone must live and die by. And who's going to make that set of rules? And if we all have to live by the same rules on a worldwide scale, then is there any individual freedom at the micro scale? Is there? You know, can people in Texas open up from a pandemic? Or can people in Texas make their own laws to govern themselves when they have to abide by regulations sent forth by the federal government, sent forth by an international body? I don't think so. And this is why I say that I am not a fan of this interconnected way of living that we are trying to push towards even more. In my opinion, I have benefited in many ways from our interconnectivity and being in the United States, so I can only bitch so much about it. But I don't think we should continue it anymore. I don't think we should continue down this path at all. I think we need to figure out a way to get our shit back locally, regionally, nationally. And that goes for every country. I think every country should be able to survive more on their own and less on other people, other countries, especially adversaries. Because then you cannot really be free. Once again, Texans can't be free if all of their shit is made in China or Mexico. How can I decide who comes into my country when important resources are coming from from other places? How can we limit immigration from countries where, you know, people are trying to steal women and children? How can we limit people coming in who want to do that to our women and children, like drug runners and stuff from Mexico? How can we stop them from coming in when we depend on them for shit? How can we stop China from stealing our IP when we depend on them? How can we elect leaders to do the right thing when our leaders are dependent on the people that we have to stop? That's what I'm getting at. That is the end of my rant for today. Anyway, you can follow me at tstuch.com, tstuch.com. You can follow me on YouTube, Taylor Space Stuch, T-A-Y-L-O-R Space Stuch, S-T-U-C-H. You can follow me on Instagram, Taylor Radio, TAYLORRADIO, and Twitter, TStuch1, TSTUCH1. Thank you. I hope you enjoy.